Hey folks, thanks for joining the Connor Gallagher Show. Look, I just finished an hour sit-down virtual conversation with the world's leading expert on the top papal contenders, okay? His name is Edward Penton, famous journalist. You've probably seen him many times. He's written best-selling books, hundreds or perhaps thousands of articles by now about what's really going on inside Rome and the Vatican. And he, with a partner of his, Diane Montagna, have created the most incredible website on the planet. It's called collegeofcardinalsreport.com. And I'll put it in the show notes, you can check it out. But this website, which I've been looking at for a month now, takes every cardinal in the College of Cardinals, 250, and gives their bio, their background, but then what they do because of their knowledge of what's going on really inside the church, how the Spirit is moving this way and that, what the electors are thinking post Pope Francis's death. They have a great list of 22 leading cardinal candidates, okay? And so you gotta go to this website and check it out. But what we do in the what I just did for an hour with Edward Penton is talk about those top candidates. I didn't get to all 22, but as a little teaser here, this is unbelievable to me. I did not expect this. But what he's hearing, the rumblings he's hearing, is that the great Cardinal Robert Seurat is a real possibility. Now, the guy's 79, almost 80. I didn't think that was even possible at this point because of age and because of where he is on the orthodox, heterodox spectrum. I didn't think the guy would even be a serious contender. But Edward is confident, or optimistic, I should say, about the cardinals want to bring order and structure back to the Vatican. Now, this is vitally important. Why? Because whether or not a cardinal likes the ideology that Pope Francis has had over the last 12 or 13 years of his papacy, most cardinals are in agreement that the Vatican is in disarray. There is a confusion, there's frustration, and just the logistics of the Vatican and the church are not running well. So this is one little reason that choosing a candidate that is very different from Pope Francis and can, even if he's old, have a couple years to bring stability, structure, order, reason, respect for canon law, to bring these attributes back into the fold in a very short order amount of time, then maybe that pope's not pope for very long because he's too old, but then the next pope, they can make another decision. So there's a real possibility, my friends, that we're gonna get somebody who is very, very orthodox, that will defend the Latin Mass, that will defend the sexual morality issues of the church, that will make sure that the synodality ideology of Pope Francis doesn't continue to get out of control. There's a lot of great things, particularly coming out of Africa. So we're going to talk about Cardinal Ambongo, who's from the Congo, strong candidate in many ways. We're going to talk about Cardinal Erdo from Hungary, a great candidate. And then we're also going to talk about some perhaps moderates, Cardinal Pizzaballa, who you may have heard about in the news, interesting guy, who's the cardinal for the Holy Land. And then we're going to talk, of course, about a handful of essentially heterodox cardinals, Cardinal Matteo Zuppi and Cardinal Petro Parolin. So there's some troubled characters in this mix that would at the very least continue the trajectory that Pope Francis put us on and maybe even take us further. Anyway, we talk about a whole lot more than these names. But before we jump into the actual episode with Edward, I want you to say to yourself, there's hope here that we could end up with a very strong pope to kind of right the ship. That Holy Mother Church is the great ship, it's the ark of salvation. And we've been tossed and turned in some crazy waves of confusion in this last papacy. So let us pray and hope that the ship will be righted and the Holy Spirit will put exactly who he wants into the chair of St. Peter, and Edward Penton is going to walk us through that. This is the only time so far I've done a virtual guest. I intend on staying usually one-on-one in person. I just think it's better. But if there was ever an exception to the rule, here it is. So I hope you enjoy. And if you enjoy, subscribe, like, and post some comments about what you think about these candidates in the comment section below if you're on YouTube. So thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Mr. Edward Penton, thank you so much for being with us today on the Connor Gallagher Show.
Great to be with you, Connor.
Well, I know it's got to be a crazy, exciting, exhilarating time over in Rome. You are one of the world's leading experts on the papal candidates, as hard as that may be for someone to actually be. But there's so much glorious information that you and some partners have combined together on collegeofcardinalsreport.com. I've been telling all my friends, this is the greatest website in the world right now. So please, everyone, go to that. We'll have that in the show notes. But it's so professionally done. So I congratulate you first on this tremendous service that you've done to the church here.
Well, thank you, Connor. Well, I should say that it really is a team effort. It was the project was led by Diane Montagna. She's a very accomplished Vatican journalist. We both co-founded it, and we got a team of researchers to including ourselves, of course, but others as well, to basically do the research for these cardinals. And we got them from across the world, from different language groups, according to where they come from. And so it's been a big process, a painstaking effort. But yeah, we were very grateful. And we put it into the hands of Our Lady. We actually consecrated it to her. And I think she has guided it. And we launched on the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe on December the 12th. And it's really been, we hope it's going to be very useful. That's the plan. It's really to be a service to the church. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and pull up the website. And we're going to, for our audience to hear, what we're going to do is we're basically going to navigate through this website and look at the different candidates. And I can't help but imagine, Edward, cardinals on the plane going over to Rome and like trying to get internet access on the plane so they can look through this website. I mean, it's an amazing thing to have worked on something that could have that kind of impact. So here we are on this website, and it has a papabile. Now, first of all, help me pronounce the word right, because I've heard different pronunciations. Papabile?
Yes, it's papabile is the singular. Papabili is plural. That's the Italian. That's why we have papabili, because it's on the front page, because there are many of them there. But yes, papabile is the singular, and it just means they're prominent candidates considered to be likely to have a good chance to become pope out of all of the college. Yeah.
The fact, Edward, that this conclave was delayed a couple days, I'm wondering if that has a rather significant impact on a certain segment of the conclave, and here's why. The more progressive candidates are very often from Europe, Italy. They know each other well. They've been hanging out, going to a lot of cocktail parties together, and they know each other well, and they're in the press a lot. But Pope Francis did something interesting. He has appointed a number of cardinals from the peripheries, Africa, mm-hmm. India, other places, Asia, that we usually don't think about too much here in the West. So these cardinals, who are maybe rather new to the College of Cardinals and are from far reaches of on planet Earth, they might not know each other as well. So these extra 2 days in the conclave are days they can get to know each other, they can talk, they can learn about each other a little bit more, and perhaps rally around a certain candidate, for lack of a better term, and unite, perhaps, because there is a practical human element to this conclave that you need to unite around certain candidates. So I'm curious if you think that this delay in starting the conclave actually helps a certain part of the conclave parties.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I think it does give them a better chance to get to know one another. The longer that the general congregations go on, and also it gives them time to discuss in more detail and give more consideration to the challenges in the church and challenges facing the world as well, and what the new Pope is going to have to deal with. So, and the kind of Pope that they're hoping can deal with these challenges. So yes, all the extra time certainly benefits that. And I think there, it was interesting actually that some of the leading, for want of a better word, liberal or perhaps heterodox candidates like Cardinal Hollerich, who's Jesuit, and Cardinal Marx, from Munich, they came over very quickly after the Pope's funeral, Pope's death rather, and I think there was this great effort on their part to try to try to steer the conclave as soon as they could. But because they've got these extra days, of course, that works against them in that sense. I think you could argue that. It could also work for them in some sense. It could help them get their positions across as well. But I think the balance is in favor of those who are perhaps wanting something, perhaps to for the church to take a different course. And as I say, there are many cardinals on the peripheries, as you were saying, you know, that the Pope chose them from the developing world, from the global south, and a lot of them don't know each other. And so this all gives them a chance to get to know one another and get to know the issues better. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Now, let me ask you another interesting question just about conclave activity. You know, it was leaked essentially a number of years ago that Bergoglio was runner up to Ratzinger when Ratzinger was elected Benedict XVI. And so I don't know how that leakage works, but I'm curious if there's any similar leakage about who may have been runner-ups or serious candidates against Francis. Has any of that information come out? And are any of them even still around or electable age at this point?
Right. Well, I think the runner-up with Pope Francis was Cardinal Angelo Scola of Milan. I think he came close second, or was certainly leading at some point. And he's now 82, 82, I think now. And supposed to be not in very good health. So I don't think he's really got a chance of being elected. But I do remember with the Francis Conclave, when he was elected, I think there was a great sort of sense that, well, yes, he came runner-up, so they're going to give him a go this time. That's what I thought. Yes, I don't think we're going to get that this time. I think we're going to possibly be in for a surprise. Who knows? But it's very, very hard to predict this one.
There is a saying that goes along with the conclaves, and it's somewhere on this awesome website, and it says something to the effect of a skinny pope follows a fat pope, or vice versa. And the idea there is that, yeah, the pendulum swings. Usually that happens in life in all human organizations. So in light of that, let's jump into some of the more conservative or traditional, and keeping in mind, these are imperfect words. I don't really like using political terms, but I'm going to be bouncing around between conservative and traditional. But let's jump into some leading candidates from that side of the spectrum. And I'm going to launch off by just asking you first, and then let you take it to other candidates if you like. Cardinal Seurat, that's one of the first names, of course, people in my circles that mention that we love him. And I suspect you would say two things. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but number one, he's getting up there in age. So when I click on his picture here on your website, it shows that he's 79 years old, and he's, you know, probably the most conservative or traditional on the spectrum in this conclave. That probably makes him very unlikely. The Holy Spirit can do what he wants. But talk to us a little bit about Seurat, and then we'll go into other conservative candidates.
Yes. Just before we start, I think Cardinal Müller had a good, said something quite interesting and I think helpful. He said that he doesn't want to talk about conservative or liberal. He wants to talk about heterodox and orthodox. And I think possibly a better label to use, or hotter, heterodox leaning and orthodox leaning, I think perhaps we could use.
I'd prefer that. Thank you for that. Yes. Yeah, and sure. Cardinal Mueller, when he speaks, I listen. So we go.
Yes, I think it's wise that he said that. So we can use that. But Cardinal Seurat is certainly a leading candidate. I think what was what's interesting about his candidacy is that he turns 80 in June. And if the Pope had lived for another 6 weeks or so, he would probably be completely out of the running. But because the Pope died when he did, he stands, I think, a pretty good chance. I mean, who knows? God knows. But I think a lot of people like his sanctity. He comes across as very holy. He's written these excellent, highly acclaimed books, which have helped a lot of people. He's considered to have very much a prophetic voice. He has a certain fearlessness about proclaiming the gospel and defending the faith. And so I think he ticks a lot of boxes. Somebody said to me the other day that he really is the people's choice for Pope. I think a lot of practicing faithful would like to see him elected for the reasons I just said.
Well, that's very reassuring because that's more positive than I thought. I would have thought 75-ish or so really starts to eliminate the candidate.
Well, that's true. But there is an argument that's going around saying that after Francis, there's possibly a need just for a sort of caretaker pope to just put things back in order because it was a very disruptive papacy, a pontificate. And I think there's a sense that there's a need for a sort of corrective papacy, a pontificate, which won't last. Which won't have to last very long, just to put things back in line. So this might be the one that could do that. That's the sort of idea. Of course, again, he's also been very strong on the liturgy, and that's very much going to be important, especially with the suppression of the traditional Latin Mass under Pope Francis. So a lot of things in his favor, I think, and that's why we put him on the papabile list.
You sure did. And on the scorecard that you have on the website, which we'll look at for other candidates as well, just for my viewers, they can see this. You know, what this shows is where does he stand on ordaining female deacons, blessing same-sex couples, et cetera. And so when you see XXX, he's against those things. And other candidates, you'll see check marks or undecisive or undecided or unknown. So it's a great scorecard. Now, while we're on Orthodox candidates, who would you say is another contender on that side of things?
Right. I think another one is Cardinal Willem Eyck. He was quite significant, I think, also in the last conclave. He's a Dutch cardinal. He's very well known for his pro-life stances. He is. He's also been through quite a lot of challenges in Holland to do with the closure of churches and the rapid secularization there, which he's had to deal with. He's also had to deal to a great extent when he was bishop with the homosexual lobby, who were very militant against him, and I think brought him some ill health as well because of it. And so he's had to face quite a lot of challenges, the challenges that a pope will have to face. And he's considered, I think, very much a strong leader, a stable one, a safe pair of hands. I think that's seemed to be very much in his favor. Yeah.
So when I click on here, and I've been through every one of these candidates carefully, but here it gives a little news evidence or supporting data about what he has done in regards to something like same-sex couples. Now, when there's question marks, for example, and help me with the pronunciation of his name again, Cardinal, how do you say his last name?
Yes. Well, I think it's actually Eyck, Willem Eyck. Eyck is how Eyck. That's pronounced. Yeah.
Cardinal Eyck. Now, just as an example here, it's unknown what he thinks about the traditional Latin Mass. It's just something that he hasn't been contending with, or maybe something that hasn't made media. So that's why there's just a question mark. We just don't know.
Yes. I think that is a bit of a question mark with him. But I think one could be quite sure that he's not going to, continue suppressing it. I think one could be fairly sure of that. But he is, very, for the Second Vatican Council, as all the cardinals are, but, he's not in any way, I think, antagonistic against the traditional mass. But as I say, as we put in the site, it's a little unknown. Yeah.
Yes. That's great. And who would have ever thought the Netherlands, you know, I mean, that's, you know, it's interesting, but because the church has suffered there so much. I mean, church attendance is extremely low in my understanding.
Indeed. And I think that's why he stands out so much, because he's a sort of a light in the darkness there, because there is such secularism, and he is someone who really does stand out because of that, because of his standing up for the gospel in the country. Yeah.
Outstanding. Now, is he just, you know, again, is he just kind of in your mind? And I know you're, who knows, only God knows, but do you put him as likely, or do you just put him in a top category of Orthodox?
I think he's likely. I don't think he possibly has the strongest support. I'm not sure. I it's hard to say. And of course, we have to keep saying that it's the Lord who's really going to decide this. And of course, Lord, the Holy Spirit doesn't choose the Pope. But I think it's a very difficult thing to predict who the next Pope is going to be. So we haven't done that in this site. We've not really made prognostications. We haven't said that this one has a better chance than another, because we simply don't know. We just think that these are known as papabili. They're known to be prominent figures who have a good chance. But we put them all on a sort of equal footing, because we just don't know.
Let me ask you about a cardinal that's probably not well known, but I find extremely interesting, the cardinal from Sri Lanka, Cardinal Malcolm Ranjith.
Ranjith, yes.
Ranjith. Looked very strong to me, particularly on the liturgy. Could we talk about him a little bit?
Sure, yes. Well, he's somebody who actually ticks almost all the boxes needed, because he's had diplomatic experience, though he's not a trained diplomat. Pope Benedict sent him to be apostolic nuncio to East Timor, which he had no training for, but he got into it, and I think he considers that one of the best time of his life, in fact. And then he was also a secretary at the Congregation for Divine Worship, as it was then. So he's a good liturgist. He knows about the liturgy. He has pastoral experience. He greatly values the time when he was a parish priest in his early years as a priest. That greatly had a great impact on him, and was very great aspect of formation for him. And so, yes, he's had curial experience. He's had pastoral experience. He's had diplomatic experience. So there's a lot. And of course, now he's the Archbishop of Colombo, a major archdiocese in Sri Lanka. So he's had a lot of experience. And he also had to deal with the terrible terrorist atrocities in Sri Lanka in 2019, which impacted him a great deal and had a great effect on him. I think he really rose to the occasion too. He was considered a great defender of just the people in that, especially against the government, which was accused of letting that atrocity happen, of knowing about it and letting it happen. And he's been very, very strong in standing up for the Sri Lankan people in many different ways. He's also very strong with interreligious dialogue too. I think that because, and that can be for some can see that as a negative. I think he's tried to be though very, very balanced with not compromising on the faith, but he's had to be because Sri Lanka has a strong Buddhist population, and there's been a lot of tension in the past between Buddhists and Catholics and other faiths in the country. So that's also a great thing in his favor. So yes, he's often forgotten about because he's getting on a little bit now, and I think his health is good, though he's had a few health issues, but nothing too serious. But I think he's been so wrapped up with what's going on in Sri Lanka that and hasn't deliberately sort of entered into the fray about Pope Francis and what's been going on in Rome, because he's been so preoccupied with Sri Lanka that I think people have tended to forget about him. But yes, he's certainly a contender.
Yes, and I think one of the things that drew my attention the most, given the suppression of the Latin Mass, was 2005 to 2009. He was Secretary of Congregation for the Divine Worship, and that would have been under Pope Benedict. So you would think that Pope Benedict would have been very careful in who he was choosing to run that office. So that's very encouraging for us. So it's interesting to see that a man who worked closely with Pope Benedict on the liturgy, just to make it clear for the listeners, is here in the conclave today as a possible pope. That's something that we may have forgotten, that there's still some people like that from Pope Benedict days.
Indeed, yes. And that definitely is relevant to our times, of course, with what's happened with the traditional liturgy. And he was very in favor of the traditional liturgy. He celebrated both forms, of course. But yes, he's somebody who will, I think, definitely correct that if he were elected.
I have two more Orthodox candidates. I'm sure there's more, but two that come to mind. Cardinal Erdo of Hungary, and Tan publishes a book about him. But then also Cardinal Bazungu from the Congo. So whichever one you want to take first, but I'm hoping we can cover both of those, rather quickly. But let's whichever one you want to take.
Sure. Let's start with Cardinal Erdo first, because he's considered pretty prominent among the Orthodox candidates. He's what is in his favor for many followers of him is his strong canonical background. He's got a very respected respected history in canon law, and he used to teach canon law in Rome as well. Excuse me. And he is considered to be, especially having had the pontificate that we've had, which really did sort of walk over the law in many ways. I think it was considered to be rather lawless, and there were many motu proprio, which are equivalent of kind of executive orders, but they were well over 100, whereas Benedict, I think, only had 8. So that gives you a clue of how sort of autocratic Francis' pontificate was. And I think in order to bring that back to a sort of more law-abiding, fair sort of mode of governance, I think Cardinal Erdo is seen as that candidate, or at least one of the strong candidates.
And having been a professor of canon law, it would seem one of the criticisms I've heard is that the current Vatican has cared very little for the canonical standards, and there's been a lot of things coming out that, confusing, which is probably an aphorism for something else. But it would seem that somebody with a canon law background, mindset, structure could be someone to bring some order back into the Vatican, because a good candidate respects the procedure, not just the substance.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. So it's not just the motu proprio. It is in all sorts of ways. I think the law was put to one side, and also apostolic tradition and doctrine. This was the great concern of Cardinal Pell, of course, Cardinal George Pell, who was very much promoting Cardinal Erdo as a candidate to succeed Francis. Before he died. So,
well, that knowing that, that was coming from Cardinal Pell, his stock price just went way up for me, and I'm sure many of my listeners. So I did not know that, but to amen to that, Cardinal Pell was a saint on this planet. And so I'm so glad to hear that he liked Cardinal Erdo. So that's wonderful to hear.
Yes. There's one, there are a few things I think that are a bit of concern about Cardinal Erdo, which is one is that I think he tends to, at least we put this in our profile because it does seem to be quite clear. He has a sort of record of being rather cautious and rather risk averse. And I think there is a bit of concern that he may not follow things through. And he can be seen as quite political, which can be good. But I think there's a sense that he may be willing to be rather pragmatic in certain issues, which could be a problem for some. So
there's a lot of question marks on your scorecard with him. The section that we're looking at here, there's a lot of areas that are important to us where we're saying, we don't exactly know what he says on this or that. So, that might actually say something in and of itself that he plays the game a little bit. Maybe he's a little bit too political or cautious, but who knows? But yes. there's some very good things to be hopeful for
there
in
are.
This candidate.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
I think now, what about the Cardinal, help me with the name, Bisungu?
Yes, Cardinal Mbongo Bisungu from the Congo. Yes, he's...
Do you say Mbongo? Do they pronounce like their middle name? Or, I mean, because I've heard him say Cardinal Mbongo, but to me it looks like his last name is Bisungu.
Yes, yes. In fact, I got that mistake too when I first came across him. I think it seems to be like the Spanish names. I think he's... although he's French speaking, I think he's normally known as Cardinal Mbongo.
Okay.
Yeah, and yes, he's seen as an up and coming star in the African in the church in Africa. He played a big role in, of course, when Fiducia Supplicans came out, the document blessing same sex couples that Pope Francis put out. He was quite strong in trying to resist that on behalf of the church in most African states. And he was quite strong in resisting that. So, and there's
May I read a little passage from your website on that?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So under, on the scorecard, I call it the scorecard, but where he stands, blessing of same-sex marriage, just one little provision here. Quote, unions of persons of the same sex are considered contradictory to cultural norms and intrinsically evil. So, and he made it very clear that in Africa, these blessings, these benedictions would not be given because it would give great scandal. So he's used strong language on that. And it seems to me rather common that the Africans have not bought into the woke ideology. And perhaps, you know, you tell me, but perhaps it's just because they're dealing with true suffering and poverty, and they're dealing with real martyrs. They're facing a machete, you know, as a real possibility in their life to be a martyr for Christ. And they're not at cocktail parties in New York City talking about woke ideology. So it seems that a certain level of common sense has resided with the African bishops because they're dealing with real life problems. Is that a fair assessment?
I think you're absolutely right. I spent a couple of years working in Africa back in the 90s. Of course, every African country is different, but they do have there is a common issue there, which is that they do abide by the traditional moral teachings of the church. They're very strong on that, and they don't. They don't abide by this sort of push towards normalization of homosexual acts and behavior in the church. And so, and as you say, they're very grounded. They're very rooted in life and in family, particularly, and in community. And this issue, I think they see as totally harmful to that.
Hey, thanks guys for checking out the Connor Gallagher Show. Please take a moment to like, subscribe, or comment, or whatever you got to do to support it. And I appreciate that very much. Let me ask you this, the synodal church issue that in the West, you know, I think we look at that and say, what is this? And I've wondered, you know, for example, this cardinal we're talking about, Mbongo, he seems to be in favor of the synodal church. But my question is, if you're in Africa and you feel very removed from the European West and Rome and the bureaucracy of all that, perhaps you're inclined to be more in favor of the synodal mindset, the synodal church, because you want Africa to deal with itself, and it's less, it wants to be less dependent on Rome. So perhaps you can be more in favor of a synodal, quote unquote, church for very different reasons than Pope Francis may have been pushing it. I could be wrong on that, but I'd like your take.
No, that's an excellent point, Connor. That you do see. In fact, it comes out in the profiles that often the African cardinals and in the Global South generally, they're very synodal, and they're very pro synodality. And I think it's precisely for that reason that you say it's because they've long sensed that the church has been too Western or centered, too Eurocentric, and they've sort of felt rather forgotten by that. So synodality gives them more prominence and more say in the church. And of course, that's what they would like. Yeah.
And I have a lot of Byzantine priest friends, and they are inclined towards synodality for the very same reason. So that's not a subject that we can just put everybody in one box, one or the other box on. So when people are looking at this website, I would caution them to conclude because you're in favor of a synodal church, that means that you're some kind of heterodox. And so it's a different standard. And again, we like to put everybody in a two-party system, and it doesn't work like that. Any other, before we turn to the more heterodox candidates, are there any other Orthodox candidates that you think should be mentioned, or did we hit the heavy hitters?
I think there are certainly others, but we have Cardinal Anders Arborelius of Stockholm, Sweden, and he's considered to be very pretty sound, I think, on doctrine and pretty orthodox. I think there's certain concerns about governance with him, but I think I've heard that he's considered a very good man. He's very popular in Sweden, and he is somebody I think a lot of people would have mentioned. He has certain continuity aspects, of course, with Francis. He's very, like many Swedes, he's very pro the environment. In fact, the environmental movement began in Sweden, I believe. So he certainly continues with that. And he's strong on interreligious dialogue and ecumenism as well. So I think there's a weakness, though, with the traditional mass, with Cardinal Arborelius. I think there's a record of him being a little bit strict on following through with Traditionis Custodes. There's shades and good things, I think, about Cardinal Arborelius, or let's say Orthodox and heterodox things.
Yes. And in terms of the environment, you know, I was going to mention, kind of harkening back to the Africans and third world country people, you know, it seems to me that if you are pro-environment and you're living in Calcutta and people are dying because they can't get clean water and they're living in constant pollution, it's a different subject matter than for us here in America aligning ourselves with the Democratic Party on environmentalism. It's a different framework. So I don't necessarily think that environmental categories for the all of these cardinals mean the same thing that it does in U.S. political system. Fair enough?
I think that's true. I think a lot of the cardinals from the developing world have gone along very strongly with the strong focus on climate issues that Francis had, but not necessarily, as you say, distinguishing between environmentalism, which has been very much a Western thing, and, as you say, that sort of concern for pollution and various issues that they're facing in the developing world, which, as you say, are quite different to those in the West. So, yeah, I think there's a difference there. These issues are very nuanced. They're not as simple as that, but we hope that sort of where they stand does give you some idea of you know, some of the nuance, but also shed light on particularly where they stand on these particular issues, which I think are going to be important for the next Pope.
Well, let's turn. We've talked about a number of great candidates on the Orthodox side. Let's shift a little bit more to the middle. I was initially, Edward, going to go all the way to the other side and talk about heterodox, but I'm curious where you put certain candidates. For example, Cardinal Pizzaballa, if I'm saying it right. When I read him, I see many hopeful things, some beautiful things that I see. I suspect that he would be in the more moderate category. So we're shifting to moderate and talk about those candidates. But correct me if I'm wrong, or what? Let's take Cardinal Pizzaballa, because I'm just dying to get that one out because I've found him such an interesting candidate. So what could you tell us about him first?
Well, he's a Franciscan. He's been in the Holy Land for 30 years or more, I think. He's comes from Lombardy region in northern Italy. So he's It's a very sort of rustic area, I think, of farmers. So he's got his feet on the ground. He's very popular, I think, across a lot of the wings of the church. He's very seen as a very safe pair of hands. He's seen as a good administrator. He has a lot of experience in that. In fact, he was brought in by Pope Francis to be the administrator of the Latin Patriarchate, precisely because there were sort of financial issues there when he came that needed sorting out, and he did sort them out. I actually worked with him, not very closely, but to some extent about 15 years ago when I was helping to edit a Franciscan publication on the Holy Land. And he was custos then. He was responsible for handling the holy sites, which are run by the Franciscans in the Holy Land. And he was very popular. Everybody loved him. He was great to work with. He was just very even-handed, a very good leader. He was, and people respected him. And they were very happy when he was elected three times as custos. Over maybe 12 years, I'm not quite sure. It was a long time he was custos. Just as father, we all always knew him as Father Pizzaballa. And he was very popular. And
he had a humble upbringing on the farm. I remember reading your website, and he went out to the barn and got the milk every day. He's a man that kind of came from another generation, even though he's only 60 years old.
Right, exactly. He's relatively young. He turned 60, in fact, the day after the Pope died. So he's, being 60 rather than 59 helps, I think, because it's not quite so young anymore. The age is an issue because, of course, if he's elected at 60, he could be Pope for 30 or more years. So
let me ask you this about the liturgy, Edward. It's interesting to me. Okay, so he's an Italian, but he's been in charge of the Holy Land for a long time. And there's, I don't know how many, 15, 16, 17 rites of the Catholic Church, Eastern rites, that have active liturgies there. It's not like being in North Carolina, where I am, where you only have the Novus Ordo and now you have the Latin Mass that's been relegated to a few places. He's a man who has experienced all kinds of all the different rites of the church, I would think, in the Middle East. So if he's comfortable with all those rites, I'm hopeful that he's comfortable with the Latin Mass because he might see it as one among many.
Yes, and there's sort of mixed signals from there because when I did a profile of him a couple of years ago, I heard that he was actually, if a priest wanted to celebrate the traditional Mass in the Holy Land in Jerusalem, he was quite happy to let them do it. And so he was very free. And this was after Traditionis Custodes. So yes, he was considered to be quite open. On the other hand, I've heard that he has restricted the TLM as well across the Holy Land. So there's a sort of mixed signals about it. We'll have to see. He certainly has, I think, a certain openness to tradition. When he took possession of his titular church in Rome, when he became a cardinal, which every cardinal has to do, the liturgy there was very traditional. In fact, somebody said it was a traditional Mass in all but name. It was a Novus Ordo, but it was very
Ad Orientem.
It was Ad Orientem. It was it had a lot of the trappings of tradition. It was in Latin, and I think it was considered to be, very, very traditional. So, and I know he has friends who go to the traditional Mass. So it's I don't think it's probably a serious concern, but I know that some people are concerned about some of his reactions to Traditionis Custodes.
Mm-hmm. What other, would you put him in kind of the moderate category, I mean, for lack of a better word?
Yes, I think he is. When I worked with him, he certainly came across as sort of a moderate, slightly left, I suppose, leaning, if you want to put it that way. I wouldn't say actually he was heterodox anyway. I didn't see that. Yes, he's certainly a moderate.
What other moderates come to mind that are serious contenders?
So, just before we go on, I think the other thing that we should mention about Cardinal Pizzaballa, of course, is his connection with the Holy Land, especially now, and with the situation with Hamas and Israel, I think that certainly also plays in his favor. He is seen as very balanced in that, probably leaning to the Palestinians more than the Israelis, but he does try to be even-handed. He's upset the Israelis, but he does try to be even-handed, as I say. So yeah, that's an important factor also in his candidacy, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Great to hear. So other moderates, who would you say?
Other moderates, yes. So I suppose we have Cardinal Kurt Koch, now he's the prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity. He's considered to be pretty center of the, middle of the road, I'd say.
How do you spell that last name so I can search him on your website?
Yes, so it's K-O-C-H. And he's now been head of ecumenism, basically, in the Vatican for many years. Benedict XVI first appointed him. And he replaced Cardinal Casper many years ago. So he's been in that position for a long time. But he's certainly seen as a moderate. He was, I think, in his youth, probably more liberal, more heterodox than he is now. He's sort of become more center, I think, than in the past. He's very much sort of rather timid and shy. So that's why a lot of people don't know much about him. A very humble man and obviously keen on unity in the church. So there's certain things in his favor, yeah.
Who else?
Who do we have? I think, there's...
Shall we go to the heterodox group?
I think we're moving to that, yes.
Okay, let's do it.
There is Cardinal Filoni, of course. Cardinal Fernando Filoni is a Vatican diplomat, and he came to prominence when there was the war in Iraq. The first
is that P-H or F?
F-I-L-O-N-I. And he was considered, he was also Deputy Secretary of State as well. So he's had, a lot of curial experience, diplomatic experience. And during the Iraq War, he was actually stayed in Iraq when the bombing started and was considered very heroic for doing so.
On that note, Edward, it just made me think, do I remember correctly that I'm sorry to back up to Pizza Bala, but I think he offered himself an exchange for hostages. Am I right about that? And that's quite heroic and beautiful.
It did. I mean, I think it was in response to a question from a journalist to whether he would do so, and he said yes. But yes, he did. He did say that he would do that, and that kind of put him on the Papa list. A lot of people.
Well, when I heard bombings, it just made me. I don't know why, it just made me think of that. So sorry, we can return to Filoni, but I just wanted to get that out.
Yes, sure. Yeah. So I think anything like that puts them in good stead if they've been willing to put their lives on the line like that. So yes, that's the case with Filoni. He's now the head of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem, which is an ancient chivalric order, also connected, of course, with the Holy Land. But as I say, he was Deputy Vatican Secretary of State, which is a very important role. It's the one that viewers may know that Cardinal Angelo Becciu was famous for holding. And it's really, he has to deal with basically running the Vatican, the Holy See, the day-to-day running of the Holy See. So that's a lot of responsibility, a lot of administrative skills needed for that. But he has a lot of diplomatic experience too. He's been the apostolic nuncio in various countries and knows the church well, of course, and is considered very much, I think, a safe pair of hands. I think he's quite a considered strong candidate. As a moderate, though, I think, as well.
Sure. So if the candidates are focused on administrative stability, that this candidate kind of rises in importance because of his practical experience day to day.
Indeed. Yes, I think so. And he also has a good knowledge of China, too. In fact, I think when he gave an interview to Los Futuro Romano about China, he was a little bit skeptical about the controversial provisional agreement that was signed under Pope Francis. And I think then he soon got shifted to the question order of the Holy Sepulchre. So, but he was willing to at least voice some concerns about that, though he was generally supportive, but I think he was a little bit concerned about it. And, but that knowledge of China, I think, puts him in good stead as well.
Okay. Take us through a few heterodox candidates.
So, yes, I think probably one of the leading ones is Cardinal Pietro Parolin. Of course, he's seen as, because he was Secretary of State. They've all had to resign their positions now. But he was Secretary of State for 12 years under Pope Francis. He's considered a very able diplomat. Yes. Again, a safe pair of hands. But he's also considered to be, he is a protege of the late Cardinal Silvestrini, who was very much a progressive, heterodox cardinal, who was very influential as well in that particular group. He was part of the so-called St. Gallen group, which were very influential in trying to thwart Benedict's election. Gallen Mafia, yes, as well, it's called. So, he's part of that sort of group, and I think that makes people rather suspicious of him. I know that some other cardinals see him very much as a pragmatist. In other words, he's willing to put aside the truths of the gospel, the truths of the faith, not proclaim Christ perhaps as strongly as he could in order to further pragmatic diplomatic concerns and be a little bit compromising on those in order to further diplomacy of the Holy See. He's very much in favor of the sort of Ostpolitik stance, which was very controversial and criticized during Paul VI's pontificate and part of John Paul II's until later on. And I think that's criticized. He's taken this very sort of pragmatic view, especially, of course, with China. China is this biggest Achilles heel, I think, because that was so controversial and so opposed by so many. Supported, too, of course, by some in China and elsewhere and within the church. There's people say, as he says, that there just be patience in order to wait and see how this disagreement plays out. And it could bear good fruit. This is Cardinal Parolin's position. Others, like Cardinal Zen, of course, say that it was greatly treacherous and betrayed the poor martyrs and the underground church, those who gave their lives to be loyal to Rome. And the agreement, as viewers probably know, is a secret agreement that allegedly, we don't know for sure, but helps give the Chinese Communist Party some say in the appointment of bishops. So this is a real contentious point for Cardinal Parolin. And
if I recall, one of the negatives against him, Edward, would be that he's been a bureaucrat his entire priesthood. He has no pastoral experience, if I recall correctly.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right, Connor. That's another thing not in his favor. And he's only been a diplomat. And so that lack of experience is, I think some will consider as a big mark against him, yeah.
One or two more heterodox candidates that are the most likely?
Yes. Another one is Cardinal Matteo Zuppi. Mm-hmm. Cardinal Zuppi is very close. He's been part of the, very close to the Sant'Egidio community, which he's been part of for a long, long time. The Sant'Egidio lay community is politically very liberal, it's politically on the left. And Cardinal Zuppi has been very much involved in leftist politics. In fact, when he was elevated to cardinal, he was, commentators said, he's the chaplain of the PD. The PD is the sort of Democratic Party in Italy. So yes. People would joke that he was the chaplain of the PD. But he's also very much considered to be a street priest. He has a great outreach to the poor. He goes around on a bicycle. You know, he's very much he's very much in continuity with Pope Francis in that regard.
He would be the most similar to Pope Francis's style and ideology. Is that fair?
I think it's fair to say that. Yeah, I think he is. He's in some ways, yes. I think he has, not to use this always as a yardstick, but I mean, he has celebrated the traditional mass. He's been quite keen to reach out to, on few occasions, but he has tried to reach out to the traditional communities. And I think that's, all part of his sort of demeanor. He wants to be basically friends with everybody. He wants to be, you know, to reach out to all, very much trying to be inclusive. On the other hand, he did support Traditionis Custodes. He did think it was right for the Pope to do that, with some nuance, but he did think so. But he's very much sort of into, you know, the fraternity and religious pluralism and that kind of thing. And some would say, you know, he's very much clearly a sort of modernist candidate. But, you know, he's a rather complex figure. And when he speaks, it can be quite hard to follow. He's very sort of intellectual in that sense. But, I don't know. He has criticisms about some of his teaching and some of his positions. We go into that quite in some detail in great detail, in fact, on the site, especially his views, so for example, on hell and these kind of things, which are not clear and kind of obscure. And I think when there's a lot of talk at the moment about the next pope being clear on doctrine, well, I think Cardinal Zuppi would just continue the Pope Francis line of being really quite ambiguous in that area.
Yes, I understand that. Now, are there any wild cards that come to mind? You know, maybe something that has just popped up in the last month or two or three. I know he appointed a lot of cardinals very recently, right before his death. So, I mean, some of these names that we've talked about, they've been around for quite some time. Does anybody come to mind that was a newcomer, a wild card?
Well, I think Cardinal Jean-Marc Aveline in France, Marseille, France, he's become quite a rising figure. At least he was under Francis, because he's considered to be very close to Pope Francis in many things, especially migration. He is very strong on migrants, he's known as Pope Francis's favorite successor.
Yes, I read that. That's an interesting thing, because he doesn't seem to match Pope Francis on some very important issues to Pope Francis. So I was surprised to see that he kind of favored him as a successor.
Yes, yes. Yes, he did. And I think they had quite a good relationship, and he was in touch with Francis quite a lot informally. And I think if they were looking for somebody who was a continuity figure, but somebody who was, you know, he's considered to be very likable. He's a very genial, you know, affable sort of character who I think could help bridge gaps between Francis and those who the late Pope alienated. But he is considered very much to be a theological modernist, I would say, and somebody who's certainly leans in a heterodox way in certain issues. Not on some, of course, but on others, yeah. So he has had
a problem with blessing same-sex couples, and he has had problems with the suppression of the Latin Mass. So that's some good news for, you know, someone like myself.
Yes, yes. I think there are elements which lean towards orthodoxy and some which lean towards heterodoxy. He's a rather complex figure. But he's somebody, I think, I heard that President Macron is keen to get elected, although whether how that's true, I don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me if that were true, yeah.
Well, this is a fascinating website. Our time is just about up. I mean, it just went through so many candidates so quickly. There are, 220 cardinals on your website? Something like that? How many would be
there? I think it's 250. I think, the Pope Francis appointed so many, I think 108 of the 134 are appointed by Francis and of the cardinal electors. I'm not sure how many he's altogether, but certainly he's appointed a lot. And the college, the Sacred College, is, I think, biggest it's ever been in terms of numbers. So, yeah, it's a large number now.
What I find interesting, Edward, and just as we wrap up, is that with the Pope's emphasis on diversity, which is a good thing, I guess, in itself, I mean, to some extent, his appointment of these cardinals that have been underrepresented, the areas of the world that have been underrepresented, you know, perhaps, I can't read the man's motives, but it might have been his intent to have kind of that diversity being overly important in his mind. But the result could be, the irony could be, pulling from the peripheries of the world, they don't buy into the woke ideology. So, right. I'm not saying that appointing them backfires on Pope Francis, but that dynamic is sort of present in my mind, if that makes sense. You could put better words to it, but that dynamic is present.
No, definitely. Yes. And I think that was commentary throughout his pontificate, that he was choosing these cardinals from the global south, who do come from often a more orthodox perspective. And he was well aware of that, I think. On the other hand, as you know, a lot of them do have positions which were very much in continuity with Francis, but on the other hand, they have many, many issues where they're not. So I think it's going to make for a much more interesting conclave than in the past, or certainly more interesting, let's say, than the past. I think it'll be, and it makes it, as I said at the beginning, it does make it unpredictable. But it does. It will make it. This is why I think there's a good chance it could swing back if they go for somebody in the global south to something more centrist or more orthodox leaning. I think that's quite possible. Yeah.
Do you think this situation that we're in leads to a longer conclave? I mean, were we going to be talking about a week versus 2 or 3 days? I mean, do you have any basis to think about that in any way?
Well, there's a mix of opinion there, Connor, because some say that because we've had a longer general congregation period, that they'll know more clearly by the time they enter the conclave exactly who to vote for. So the conclave could be quite short. On the other hand, there's another argument that says, well, there are so many, they still probably won't know each other that well, and they come from such diverse backgrounds that the conclave could go on for some time. Who knows? I suspect it'll be 4 days at the most. It could be over by the weekend. But who knows? The Lord knows. He's in control of it all, and we just have to wait and see.
Well, we'll leave it on that. You stay online with us, but we'll be, you know, exiting out of this. This is our first virtual podcast that I've done. I usually have the rule of in person, but this is a extreme circumstance. I'm so grateful, Edward. You have spent your career, your life, your expertise, learning so much about Holy Mother Church, looking at the inside of it. And I commend you, particularly, Edward, for keeping a strong faith despite having seen kind of the nasty side, the human side of the church. It's sort of like, you know, you don't want to see how sausage is made inside a dirty kitchen, you know, as the old saying goes. But you have continued to be faithful and a joyful representative of things going on in Rome. I thank you for that. I thank you for this wonderful website. Please give our appreciation also to Diane, who's done a remarkable job with this. This is a true service to the church. This is a publishing in a different way. I publish books. But thank you for your time. And I hope at some point, maybe after we have a new Holy Father, we can get together again and maybe talk about what the Lord has in store for the church.
Sure thing, Connor. And yes, well, thanks be to God. Praise God that it's you, that you like it, and that we hope it does serve the church in a very positive way and bear good fruit and really help the cardinals and help the faithful as a whole. That's really what we want from this, to give glory to God and to be of great service to the church, at least that it be of service to the church. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. Thank you, Edward. Take care now.
Thank you, Connor. Good to be with you.
Hey, thanks guys for checking out the Connor Gallagher Show. Please take a moment to like, subscribe, or comment, or whatever you got to do to support it. And I appreciate that very much.